So I'm Mahesh Balakrishnan, and today I'm going to talk about Corfu, which is a storage system that we've been building at Microsoft Research Silicon Valley. This is joint work with a number of my co-authors at MSRSVC. I'll just leave it down here. So a little over 5 years back, Jim Gray made this very famous prediction. He predicted that flash would essentially eat the market for disk from below, in his words. So at the time when he said this, flash was already fairly prevalent in low-end consumer devices like MP3 players and so on. And Jim predicted that from there, flash would make its way into desktop machines and enterprise server machines and into the data center. 5 years and a few months later, it turns out that, as usual, Jim was right. Today, we have a fairly large and growing industry in enterprise flash. You have a bunch of startups. You have major players like Intel entering the space. And as we saw this happen, as we saw flash drives being deployed in the data center, we posed a research agenda that was centered around the following question: do flash clusters give us a capability that we did not have before with disk infrastructure? And specifically, our hypothesis was that somehow flash clusters could eliminate or at least alter the trade-off between strong consistency and performance. So if you look at today's systems, systems scale beyond the scope of a single machine by partitioning data across machines. And when they do that, they give up strong consistency. So our intuition was that with flash clusters, you wouldn't have to do this. You could get strong consistency without partitioning and still operate at cluster scale. And the other question was, well, if flash really does have this magical capability, what are the right abstractions at the scale of a cluster or at the scale of a single drive that we need to exploit this capability? I'm going to start by telling you about the abstraction that Corfu exposes. So Corfu exposes a shared log. What do I mean by this? The setting for Corfu is a data center where up on top you have application servers, they're executing code. I'm going to call them clients from now on. And down at the bottom you have a flash cluster. And the whole point of Corfu is to take this cluster and expose it to those machines up on top as a single global shared log. So every server has some application code and it links to a Corfu library. And the library lets it append data into this big shared log and read data anywhere from the middle of the log. Now, by application, I really mean infrastructural applications, things like state machine replication, databases, transactional key value stores, and so on. So I mean infrastructural applications that require strong consistency. For example, if you wanted to build state machine replication over a shared log, you would simply use the log to store and retrieve state machine commands. To give you another concrete example, one application we're building over Corfu right now is a database called Hyder. This is a database designed by Phil Bernstein and his colleagues at MSR Redmond. And he showed last year in a CIDR paper through simulation that given a shared log that gave him enough performance, he could build a database that could support hundreds of thousands of transactions without partitioning data. And all he needed for that was a shared log abstraction that could run at hundreds of thousands of appends and reads. So the bottom line here is that a shared log is a very powerful abstraction. It can be used to build these strongly consistent systems that do not partition data, that operate at cluster scale without sacrificing consistency. And what's the magic here? Why can we do this today with flash and not before? Well, the secret sauce here is that flash lets you do random reads to the middle of the log without losing performance. If you try to replicate this infrastructure using disk, you'd get a very poorly performing system because you have hundreds of clients hitting the middle of the log simultaneously. So I've told you that we want to build a scalable shared log over a cluster of flash. The other half of the story is that we want to do so over network-attached flash. So this is new custom hardware that we're designing right now. And the insight here is very simple. You have flash that's very fast. You have networks today that are incredibly fast. It makes absolutely no sense to put a slow, bulky, expensive machine in the middle that's going to be a bottleneck. So by placing flash directly on the network, we get a whole number of benefits. We cut down the cost of flash massively. We cut down the power consumption by a whole lot, and it's also lower latency, higher throughput, and so on. And to give you some numbers, if you look at the task of assembling a cluster of flash that gives you 10 gigabits of I/O and that has a terabyte of storage, today there are really three ways of doing it. You could buy 10 1 gigabit machines, put an SSD in each, and that will cost you something like $20,000, and you'll be using 1,500 watts because you have all these servers doing essentially nothing. And alternatively, you could take one big 10 gigabit machine and put something like a PCI Express SSD inside. Depending on how expensive the PCI Express SSD is, that will cost you something like $10,000 to $30,000. And instead, if you build this sort of a cluster out of network attached flash units, it takes you just $2,000, and the whole setup takes up 100 watts, which is less than a single machine today. So that sets up the problem statement for the technical part of this talk. We want to build a scalable shared log because we think that enables strongly consistent applications that can operate really fast. And we want to do so over a cluster of these custom network attached flash units that sit directly on the network. So how do we do this? The Corfu design is as follows. So up on top, you have one of those client machines that's running application code, links to a Corfu library. And the Corfu library gives the application a very simple API. The application can read any entry in the log by giving an offset. The application can append data to the log, and it gets an offset in return. And the application can trim data in the log. This is a garbage collection primitive that I'll describe later. Now, how is this implemented underneath? At a very basic level, every position in the log, every entry in the log has to be mapped to some physical flash locations in the cluster. So some mapping has to exist in the system. And in Corfu, this mapping resides entirely at the client. So the client has enough information to do this mapping locally. Now, this is a very important point that everything in Corfu happens at the client. We have a client-centric design, and all the protocols I'll show you in the next few slides occur at the client. The reason we have this design is because we want to operate over network-attached flash. We really expect these units to be very simple. So we don't expect them to communicate with each other, and we expect them to just support an address space that you can write to across the network. So I'm going to start by telling you how reads work in Corfu. So here you have the client's running an application, and the application issues a read to the Corfu library. And on the right side of the slide, you can see the Corfu cluster. Now, when the Corfu library receives a read on a particular position, it consults a local data structure that we call a projection. Now, to a first approximation, the projection is simply a view of the cluster. So it has a list of nodes. And that view tells Corfu somehow what the mapping is from log entries to positions on the cluster. For instance, here on the bottom, I'm showing you the log. So you have L0, L1, L2. Those are log entries. And on the top, I'm showing you the mapping from log entries to drives. Here we are using a RAID 1.0 mapping where we are pairing up drives. So D1 and D2 are mirrors of each other. D3 and D4 are mirrors, and so on. So we have four mirrored stripes, and each stripe has two drives. And you can see that we have a very simple mapping where we go round robin over the stripes. So log entry L0 is on page 0 on D1 and D2. Log entry L1 is on page 0 on D3 and D4, and so on. So this is very simple. It's a very simple deterministic mapping. Now, the important point is that for this mapping, all you need is basically a list of nodes because it's deterministic. So it's not a large amount of state at the client. The client just needs to know a membership of the system. Once the Corfu library figures out which locations in the cluster the log entry is mapped to, it directly issues I/O to these flash units across the network. So clients access these flash units directly without any intermediary nodes. And so it issues a read to one of those two units, and I'll tell you which one in a bit. So this is how reads work in Corfu. How do appends work? It's So when the application issues an append to the Corfu library, the first thing Corfu does is go to a sequencer node. That's the extra node you see up on top. So it goes to the sequencer, and the sequencer gives it a token or a free position at the tail of the log. Now, the sequencer is, so the sequencer gives it a token, and using that token, the Corfu library can map that log entry to a set of flash pages, and it goes and does the write to those flash pages. Now, obviously, the sequencer is a bottleneck here. If you have to append data, you have to go to the sequencer. But the really crucial point here is that the sequencer does not see any I/O. So you can run as fast as the sequencer can issue these tokens, and tokens are just 64-bit numbers, so the sequencer is basically just a counter on the network. Now, our current implementation of a sequencer runs at around 250,000 tokens per second, but we believe we can scale this to a million fairly easily. Our current implementation is a user space process. We believe if we do this in hardware, we can easily get to a million. So that's the one bottleneck in this system, the sequencer node, which is basically a counter on the network. Now, what can go wrong here? The first thing that occurs to most people is that the sequencer is a single point of failure, and I'll get to that in a second. The other thing that can go wrong is that a flash unit can fail. And the third thing that can go wrong, which is peculiar to our system, is that the client can fail. And I'll explain that failure scenario in a bit. Now, it turns out that sequencer failure is really not a problem because the sequencer is only an optimization. So the sequencer, as I told you, is a counter that indicates the tail of the log. But if we lose it, clients can firstly probe for the tail of the log by talking to flash drives directly. And in the next slide, I'll show you why that's true. So I'm going to show you why the sequencer failure is not a big deal, and then after that, I'll show you the other two failure scenarios. So the reason we can tolerate sequencer failure is because we use a form of chain replication in Corfu, where you have these two drives, which are a mirrored pair, and a client wants to write to the drives. It does not do so in parallel. Instead, it goes to one of the drives first, waits for an acknowledgement, and then goes to the second. And it basically walks down the chain. Now, this protocol has a couple of nice properties. Firstly, all writes have to go through the head of the chain, and therefore we can have this property where if multiple clients are trying to write different values to the same entry, only one of them will win because the head can arbitrate. And similarly, we can have a property where you read from the tail of the chain, and so like conventional chain replication, you only see values if all replicas have received them. So this is basically identical to chain replication with the caveat that the client is issuing the writes, whereas in chain replication, the writes tend to flow through the chain. Now, this requires a property from the flash units. Before, I told you that the flash units were just simple address spaces that you could read and write to. Instead, we now need them to be write once. So if you change a particular flash page and then someone else tries to change it, we need an error to be returned. So you can see that if the sequencer fails, nodes can essentially probe for the tail of the log by just trying to write to each successive entry. And when they reach an entry where they don't get an error, that's the tail of the log. Alternatively, they can also ask the flash drives. We support primitives for finding out the tail of the log. But the bottom line is the sequencer is actually not a very bad failure mode at all. Now, how do we handle failures of flash units? So here we have a scenario. This is basically identical to what I was showing you a couple of slides back. You have a cluster of 8 drives, which is carved up into 4 stripes, two mirrors each. And you have this client that's writing data to the log. It's already written 8 entries. At this point, a failure occurs, D2 fails. Now, the property we want in this kind of a storage system is that we want to replace D2 with a new drive, D9, and we want new appends to go to both D1 and D9, because we want the system to be available and to maintain full replication. But for older reads, while D9 is being rebuilt, we want to serve that from D1 because that's the only drive in the system. So basically, we want availability for reads on the whole log while having writes go to 2 replicas. Now, the way we do that in Corfu is by splitting the log. So I told you that a projection was just a view of nodes, and I was lying. A projection is instead a list of views of nodes. So here we carve the log into two pieces, a blue piece and an orange segment. And the blue segment points to a view that does not have D9, it has only D1. So if anyone tries to read from old data, they'll go to D1. On the other hand, if anyone tries to append new data or read from the orange segment of the log, they end up going to a view of the system that has both D1 and D9. Projections are actually very flexible. Let's say that this cluster of drives fills up, and I want to extend my system to use a new cluster of drives, say, you know, D10 to D17. All I need to do here is again carve up the log so that you now have three disjoint segments, each of which is pointing to a different view of the system. And I haven't shown it here, but ultimately D9 is going to be rebuilt from D1. And at that point, we can merge the orange and the orange and the blue segments together, the first two segments. Now, this is what projections are. So they're sort of extended views. They are, you know, they carve up the log into lists of views. To actually go from one projection to another, we use what is essentially a view change protocol. So any client can initiate reconfiguration. And when it initiates reconfiguration, it first goes to all the flash units in the current cluster, seals the current projection, tells them to, you know, not talk to anybody who has the current projection, and then it goes and installs a new projection on an auxiliary. And an auxiliary is basically just some other state machine. So this we can implement using conventional Paxos, for instance. And it turns out that this entire process is really fast. So on a 32-drive cluster, we can reconfigure the system in around 10 to 20 milliseconds. So I told you that there's a special failure mode in Corfu that's problematic, and that's client failures. So unlike other systems, because Corfu is client-centric, we have this failure mode where the client can go get a token from the sequencer, and then it can crash before using the token. And this essentially results in holes in the log. Now, why are holes a problem? If you have some kind of application like state machine replication that's playing the log forward and executing every command in order, when it encounters a hole, it has a problem. Somebody has to fill that hole before it can proceed. And that's exactly what the solution is. We have clients aggressively detect holes and fill them with junk values. And to do this, basically, we have a fill operation that walks the chain. So if a write has been partially completed on the chain, it completes the write. If no write has occurred on the chain, it fills it with a junk value. And this is a metadata operation, so we don't actually burn any flash. So if you recall, there was a trim command in the API. So what's this about? As the log fills up, you need to do garbage collection on it. Now, the simplest form of garbage collection is one where the application can somehow throw away large segments of the log. So this is what we call a prefix trim, where the application says, I don't need anything in the log before entry 1000 or so. And this works really well for some applications. It works very well for databases because they're going to take snapshots anyway. It works very well for state machine replication for similar reasons. And this we can support very easily. We don't need any extra capabilities from the flash unit, and we just use reconfiguration for this. However, to support more complex applications, we also support what we call an entry trim or an arbitrary trim, where you can invalidate particular entries in the log. But to support this, we need greater capabilities from the flash unit. In particular, we need the flash unit to expose an infinite address space, or at least a 64-bit address space instead of a compact one. And it turns out that this is, in fact, feasible on modern hardware, but it's a little more complicated. But if we can do this, we can build things like distributed file systems that are log structured, for instance. So I'm going to show you what Corfu performance looks like. So this is a Corfu cluster of 32 drives, and we are increasing load by adding drives to the system. And as we add drives, you can see that read throughput is scaling linearly. So this is a very simple graph. The more drives you add to a Corfu instance, the more reads you can do of it. And this is obvious because there's no read bottleneck in the system. We are spreading writes across the cluster, so reads get spread too. Now, here's the corresponding graph for appends. And this is a little more interesting. In the beginning, as you add drives, you get more append throughput. At some point, we hit a bottleneck, and that's the sequence of bottleneck. So in our current implementation, it bottlenecks at around 190,000 appends per second. Even if we had a perfectly scalable sequencer, we are almost at the limit of our flash. So if we had more drives, we'd have to optimize our sequencer. But we really think we can push it to around 1 million appends per second. Now, all of this is not a network-attached flash. It's on an emulator where we attach an SSD to a machine and make it act like network-attached flash. We do have working network-attached flash, but we have only one or two units of that. So we can't show scalability experiments. But what we have is numbers showing that a single unit can saturate a gigabit and use up around 15 watts. So the graphs you would get with network-attached flash would look very similar to this. Now, the name CORFU has really two meanings. One, it's an acronym. It stands for clusters of raw flash units. But it's also an island in Greece near Paxos. So what's the relationship? You know, how far are they? Well, not very far, but that's not very helpful. So if you look at most protocols, if you look at these two protocols, if you look at CORFU and Paxos, they produce the same output. They produce a totally ordered sequence of commands. But if you look at most Paxos-like protocols, they're all I/O bound. They typically have a leader that has to see all I/O. There are variants where I/O goes through a quorum and so on, but the bottom line is that the throughput of the protocol is a function of the I/O bandwidth of a single node. Now, if you look at CORFU, so this is the picture I showed you before, where you have four different replica sets, and each of these is a chain. So if you look at each of these chains, it turns out that this is basically equivalent to a normal consensus protocol. So we are essentially running chain replication four times. Now, in normal systems, the way you'd run it is you'd run four instances of chain replication, partition data across them, and they'd be independent instances. You don't get any ordering guarantees across them. But in CORFU, we run these four instances of chain replication, and then we stitch together the commands they produce using the projection. So the insight here is the reason we can scale much, much more than any consensus algorithm out there is because we do this partitioning over time rather than space. And we are not I/O bound by any single node. So to conclude, I showed you a design for a scalable shared log that could work over network-attached flash units. And this design is extremely scalable. It scales linearly. If you add more drives, you get more reads from the system. And there's a sequence of bottleneck that we're working on, but we think we can make it hit around 1 million appends per second. And this, in turn, enables strongly consistent systems like databases that can run at hundreds of thousands of transactions per second. And second, we built this entire system over these network-attached flash units that we really believe are the future for flash because they're very low power, they're very inexpensive, and they seem to be the right way to connect flash in a cluster. Thank you.
Okay, we have about 5 minutes or so to take some questions from Mahesh.
Hi, David Anderson, Carnegie Mellon. This is a totally out of the blue question. So if you have no answer, that's fair because I don't expect you to actually have a crystal ball. But we keep hearing from all of these various hardware manufacturers that next up is the perfect NVRAM. It's gonna be memristor or spin torque or phase change or something else, and they're all fighting and no one knows who's gonna win. If one of them actually comes through with their fairy tales, what parts of your design do I want to keep, and which parts do I want to throw out? And what benefit are you going to give me in this kind of write anywhere, don't need to deal with all the peculiarities of flash world that the fantasy people believe in?
I think, in terms of fairy tales, it would be very nice if NAND flash continued scaling and became more expensive, but we'll... A lot of the variants you talked about are byte addressable. So we really have no idea what happens to this log abstraction once it's byte addressable, because part of the reason we have fixed size entries is because it's tailored towards page sizes and so on. Sure. Maybe we could have a log where we can have arbitrary appends, which would in fact be very useful. It's something that we've tried to layer on top. You know, right now, for instance, there's a sort of a forced limit. We need to pad things together to fit 4 kilobytes and so on. But I do agree, a lot of it seems to be fairy tales, so it's...
Thank you.
John Dunnigan. Mahesh, so one of the things I didn't understand from your talk was, what are the benefits to pulling the having the flash be on a separate series of cards? It seems to me like you've just pulled it out of the client servers. I don't understand why it's beneficial to do that and have that additional separation.
So John, this is a design where every server ends up talking to every flash unit by definition. So if you're going to do that, it seems natural to take all your flash and put it in a location where you have a lot of bandwidth into it. We could have it co-located with machines, but this is not a design that exploits locality at all. It's the exact opposite. So in fact, it would perform extremely well on a network that doesn't care about locality, like, you know, the stuff that you guys have been building. That if you did co-locate it with a machine, then you'd be going through the machine to get to the flash from other machines, and you know, there you again get to this point that you're inserting a machine in between flash and the network, unless you have some capability to directly access the flash.
Thank you.
So Ben Reed from Yahoo. So I was wondering, how baked in is the single log abstraction?
Can you repeat that?
So currently you have a single global log abstraction. But many times in data centers, you have multiple different applications that each want their own log. They don't need it to be global. So how baked in is this notion of a single log in your design?
I think we expect multiple logs for multiple applications. So this is really one log per application, where application is something like a file system or maybe an instance of a file system and so on. So I don't think we're claiming that your entire data center is just going to have one Corfu log. But you know, if you built something like ZooKeeper, for instance, yeah. One ZooKeeper instance could live over one Corfu log.
Yeah, but given that you're striping this over a bunch of logs, I mean, maybe you wouldn't, I mean, is okay, can you share a Corfu instance across multiple applications?
Probably not. I think it would be very messy. We'd need a multiplexing layer at that point. And
okay, let's thank Mahesh. Thanks.